Thank you. Well, Bruce and I are both covering books, but from a different perspective, and I have a very specific assignment, which is updating you on the new EPUB 3 standard, which I italicized the word new. It actually became an official recommendation at the Frankfurt Book Fair on October 11th, so it's not even 2 months old, which actually leads me to my first slide, because what people most often ask me about this when I talk to them about EPUB 3 and how important it is, they say, well, but are there any EPUB 3 readers out there yet? And I always respond, that's why the standard is out when it is. The idea was to get out before the technologies outran it. There's so much development in this area, so many devices happening. What we wanted to try to forestall is individual developers, individual platforms, individual devices going in proprietary directions and incompatible proprietary directions. So this was actually a very, very, I won't say a mad dash, but it was an extremely fast development process for this. The working group was led by Marcus Gilling from the DAISY Consortium. Brilliant guy, brilliant working group leader, and really drove this to conclusion quickly and on a very fast schedule, precisely so that the standard is there so that the developers ideally can coalesce around this, and as publishers, we won't have the kinds of problems we had in the last generation where we have to make different files for different platforms. And I will also say just a little bit about the working group. I was chair of the metadata subcommittee, but I was active in the, or am active. I should also stress the present tense, and I'll get to why in a moment. But it was a very broad representation. I don't know how many of you have been on industry working groups. There were 170-some people on this working group. Now, if you have been on a working group, you'll know that that's a ridiculous number. So what that means is 170 people are nominally on the working group. So 100 and some are probably paying attention along the way. And maybe 80 to 100 are probably paying attention to the listserv. And maybe 30 or 40 show up for every weekly conference call. And there's a core group of people that are doing most of the work on the standard. This is just how it works. Bruce can probably attest to this. He's been on many of these working groups and standards committees. But having said that, it wasn't a coterie. It was a really good, broad, broadly representative group. Apple was deeply involved. Adobe was deeply involved. Google was deeply involved. Sony, Barnes & Noble, et cetera. So in addition to publishers of all kinds, very large, very small, service providers, technologists, et cetera. So it really was a terrific working group. And one reason I particularly stress people like Apple, Barnes & Noble, Adobe, et cetera, is that these are the folks that are developing the devices and the platforms and the tools, and they all had a lot of input. You may notice the elephant in the room that I didn't mention because, no, Amazon did not participate. But I will get to later why what they've done is still compatible with EPUB 3. So enough of the background, but that was really an important context because it was really quite an inclusive group and tried to produce a standard that's very, very broadly applicable and yet highly functional. Another very basic thing that people misunderstand is it's not just for books. You notice that its name is EPUB, not ebook. That's absolutely deliberate. Admittedly, the prior generation of the EPUB standard really came out of the trade book industry, and it didn't really address the needs of STM, textbooks, let alone magazines, other kinds of publications. But that was something that this working group was not only conscious of, it was in our mandate from the get-go that dealing with textbooks, dealing with STM, dealing with magazines and other kinds of publications, corporate publications, et cetera, it needs to be a very general purpose standard that's applicable to people doing any of these kinds of publications to enable them to deliver into the e-reader ecosystem. And that's, of course, very diverse. I don't need to repeat this for this group. One thing that I do want to point out to you, though, is in addition to the fact that it has to work on all these devices, a key concept of EPUB is that it has to work offline. And that's something you do need to keep in mind because it's different from a website. It's not just a website in a box, which some people often represent it as being. But a lot of the decisions that I'll get to in a minute when I get into the specifics about the standard were driven by the fact that it's designed to not be dependent on online access, which means everything you need to render and consume this e-publication has to be able to be put in a container, and it's self-contained. There are two exceptions, which I'll get to in a minute. So one way I like to characterize it is it's a package masquerading as a file format. Yes, it's .epub. You all probably know that you can just change the extension to .zip, and then you can see all the stuff that's actually inside there. It's really a zip file. It's the MIME type is EPUB because what those things are inside is what we specify in the format. What's in there are XML content files of a couple of different types, images, style sheets, scripts, audio and video, fonts, metadata, and links to external content. I'll get to what that means in a minute because there's a specific definition for what we mean by external. But all those kinds of things are what's in there. It's a whole lot of files. It's not one file. I mean, yes, it's one file. It looks like one file when you get the EPUB, but inside it's lots of stuff. So what EPUB does is organize all that stuff. And as we were working on some of you have seen these pictures before. I just can't stop using them. the dilemma is, you know, should we be very strict in writing the standard? Should we be very permissive? And the answer isn't to shoot for the middle. The answer is some of each. In other words, there were some aspects to the EPUB standard that, in fact, do need to be strict. So, for example, there are two font formats permitted in EPUB 3, OpenType and WAF, and that's it. So that's very strict. There's no waffling on that. There were other issues. I'll get to the video formats a little bit later, where circumstances made us be not at all strict in terms of that issue. So individual aspects of the spec were treated differently. Another really kind of important governing principle behind how this standard was created was that if you want to get people to conform to a standard, it's probably a good idea to make the standard conform to what people are doing right now anyway, right? Seems pretty obvious, but too often that's not done, and you'll see what the implications of that are in a second. And also the fact that if you've got a choice of multiple options, which is what we have in the web world, it actually helps people if you can narrow the choices down and say, look, if you're going to put fonts in here, it has to be one of these two types. If you're going to do scripting, it has to be done this way, et cetera, because it just rationalizes the whole process, both for the creators and the publishers and the reading system developers. Because keep in mind, that's why those folks from places like Apple, et cetera, were so eager to participate in this activity, because just as it benefits the publisher to have a single file that they can send out that actually works in a lot of different devices and a lot of different environments, it's equally beneficial to the makers of those reading systems to know that when they get files from publishers, they're very predictable. They know what they're going to get if they get an EPUB. So it's really important to use widely used browser-based standards, and this probably won't surprise anybody, but the top thing on the list is HTML5. It's not a coincidence that everybody is talking about HTML5 today. It's the dominant technology for how this kind of content is worked with on the web. I'll get to a little bit more on that in a second. SVG is a defined profile. CSS3, and there's a particular, that's a style sheet spec, and there's a particular profile called EPUB style sheets in terms of how to use CSS3, JavaScript for scripting, Dublin Core for metadata. So these are all very fundamental technologies, very widely used technologies. They're how most people that are doing this work are doing it anyway right now. Those that I indicated with the little EPUB logo are what are called core media types in the standard. What that means is that any EPUB 3 reading system is required to be able to properly interpret those technologies. Doesn't mean that when you create an EPUB, you can't put something else in, but if you put something in that is not a core media type, you have to provide what's called a fallback that is a core media type. So, for example, if you put ChemML, which is not a core media type, MathML is, by the way, but MML is not, you would have to provide an image of a chemical structure so that a reading system that doesn't know how to render ChemML can still render this. The idea is that one thing that the EPUB ensures to the reading system is that, and to the user, is that it works. That it doesn't just what is called, you know, they don't experience what they call catastrophic failure because there's one thing that's unpredictable in there, so the whole system just can't work. So it's designed to work even if it's not working optimally in a particular context because of the limitations of a certain reader. So I'm gonna go through the different aspects of this, and I'm going to lay out a lot of the detail about the specs. I hope I'm not getting into too technical a detail, but I think this is really helpful to people for you to understand, you know, what are these basic specs. So first of all, the markup of the content. The main content model is it's XHTML, but technically what it is the XML serialization of HTML5. The reason I'm waffling on that a little bit is that there's an XHTML 1.1 schema. There is no such thing as an HTML5 schema. So you all probably know that there's a difference between, well, all XML is well-formed, but to have valid XML, it has to parse against the schema. There isn't an HTML5 schema, but this is not just HTML. It is expressed as XML or XHTML. MathML is also included. People that are knowledgeable about MathML often panic about that, saying, if you realize that there's both semantic math and presentational math within that MathML spec, it's really just the presentational aspects that are part of the EPUB3 spec. It's just being able to render those equations. It doesn't expect a reading system to be able to compute equations, et cetera. The old model had a separate markup model called DTBook that came out of DAISY, the accessibility side of things. That's been eliminated. I should also mention that the DAISY people were extremely deeply involved in the development of the standard, and they've been done in parallel because DAISY has actually just put out a new generation of the DAISY spec, DAISY 4, in two components. One is an authoring and interchange model that has a set of useful semantics that help people that are print impaired to be able to interpret the content. But the delivery mode for DAISY is now EPUB 3. So the idea is it's not a different format, it's the same format. Now, when I say uses HTML5 and modules of CSS3, again, folks that are somewhat knowledgeable about what's happening in the industry often say, wait a minute, HTML5 isn't a finished standard yet. That's actually true. If you look on the W3C website, they say, well, we expect this to be a formal recommendation by about 2014. And you can imagine this prompted a lot of discussion in the working group. How can we make a standard, a stable standard, on something that isn't yet a stable standard? Because there's a lot that's still being worked on in the HTML5 world. The solution, but we also felt that it was impossible to base this on anything except HTML5, because HTML5 is so central to everything we're doing on the web, in browsers, et cetera. So it's really using aspects of HTML5, basically the entire HTML5. There's a difference between HTML5 and CSS3. HTML5 is what's called a monolithic spec. It's all one standard. CSS is actually a modular spec. So with CSS, we could kind of pick and choose modules. With HTML5, it is, in fact, all of HTML5, but there are certain guidelines in EPUB 3 as to how it can be used. And then another thing that we created, this is a new aspect, is something called a canonical fragment identifier, CFI. One of the subgroups originally was a subgroup that was working on issues like linking, identification, annotation, citation, et cetera, between EPUBs. It is a monstrously complex issue when you get into it. And so we realized that it was impossible to complete work on that whole scope of things without seriously delaying the development of the release of EPUB 3. So that was basically put aside, and we took what we felt was a first step, which is a uniform syntax for basically marking a spot within your EPUB. It was prompted by the needs of the accessibility folks, but what we realized is that reading systems are all doing this anyway, they're just doing it in a proprietary way. That's how they remember where you stopped reading, so that when you open it up again, they open it back up to the spot you were. They're putting a marker in there so that they know where you left off. It's just that it's a proprietary marker in all the different systems. Well, now we've got what should be a standard way to express this is the spot I'm talking about. Does that mean the reading systems are going to make it possible for you to then open up your something you started reading on your iPad and then you open it up in the Nook? Well, that's a commercial decision for Apple and Barnes & Noble to make. But at least there's a way they could do that if they were motivated to do that. Another thing is that I often get asked is, well, I've got thousands of EPUBs in EPUB 2. Do I have to change them all? The answer is no. You may change them if you want to enhance them with EPUB 3 capabilities, but all EPUB 3 reading systems are required to render EPUB 2 files properly. So all of those eBooks that you already have out there should be absolutely fine. It's just that they'll be just like they are now. They won't do anything better than they do now, but they'll do what they do now. On the layout side, CSS3 provides the ability for multi-column layout. The CSS spec in EPUB is really almost all CSS 2.1, which is the prevailing standard that's mostly used in CSS style sheets today. A few modules from CSS 3 have been incorporated because they bring in functionality that was needed. One really powerful thing about the new spec is that it supports multiple style sheets. So the beauty here is that you can have one EPUB file, one set of content, but you can have, say, well, let me just give you an example. Well, I'll give you a trivial example, and I'll give you a more useful example. The trivial example is you can have a night mode and a day mode, where you've got a black on white and a white on black rendering. You can also have a style sheet for a 10-inch tablet held horizontally, landscape, a 10-inch tablet held profile, a 7-inch horizontal, a 7-inch profile. And there's an aspect of CSS3 is called media queries, which is basically the way I describe it is the system senses where it is. It says, oh, I'm in a 10-inch device being held landscape, therefore I invoke this style sheet. And that's why when you turn it, the system just automatically invokes the other style sheet and can reflow your content to optimize for that view. So that's a really useful thing. But then, as an old typographer, the fact that you've got dramatically better control of things like hyphenation and spacing, alignment, line breaks, word spacing, letter spacing, stuff like that, you can really do much, much more visually beautiful typography. I have a Kindle. I actually hate it. Everyone I know that has a Kindle loves their Kindle, but I'm a typographer, and those pages are just butt ugly. I just hate looking at those pages. There's hope. Fonts are ideally to be embedded in the new EPUB spec. And this is not just, it's obviously useful from a design point of view, so that when a reader can use those embedded fonts, your publication is as gorgeous as you want it to look. But it's also really useful in contexts like math and non-Latin alphabets, which are very relevant to an STM crowd like this, because you can, you know, XML in general is all inherently Unicode. So that means that you can specify what the encoding of the character is, but you have to have a way to, you have to have a glyph to render in a visual rendering system what that thing is. So you have to have a font that will understand what this particular Unicode value is, and you have a font that'll say, I have the character that corresponds to that Unicode value. So you can embed those fonts in your EPUBs. I mentioned OpenType, which is the dominant format for in print production, and WAF, which is the dominant font format for online-only kind of content. And then fonts can be obfuscated. That's a good word, and it's actually a way better word than we had before, because what we used to call them was mangled. And I raised my hand and said, can we come up with a better word than mangled? Well, we wound up with obfuscated, so it sounds a little classier. GIF, JPEG, PNG, and SVG are the image media types. Support for vertical writing, right-to-left pagination. Ruby, which is a kind of a pronunciation guide for Asian languages. Very important to that realm of people, the East Asian. By the way, there was a big participation from East Asian publishers as well. Japanese, Taiwan, Chinese, etc. Because obviously this is an important technology for them as well. In terms of audio, MP3 and MP4 are the required formats for audio. I have a story behind the HTML5 situation, behind the video spec. Originally, the spec called for what is called the codec is basically how the video file is encoded. And what's mostly used now, most of the videos that you see on the web use a codec called H.264. H.264 was in the spec until somebody pointed out that even though it's almost universally used right now, there are actual royalty encumbrances to that encoding. And one of the key principles behind EPUB is that it's based entirely on open standards and everything has to be royalty free. So we thought we can't have an aspect in the standard here that has a royalty obligation attached to it. So there was a big move to switch to VP8 or what's called WebM. This is a format that's promoted by Google. It's royalty free. It does have an IP aspect. It's governed by a Creative Commons license, but it's readily available and there's no royalties associated with it. We also debated about specifying just those two. Tons of debate. I mean, if you've been on one of these working groups, I often characterize them as kind of college dorm room debating sessions. You know, people get very passionate about these things, and we'll talk endlessly about H.264 versus VP8. But anyway, we ended up having to punt on that issue, and the reason is that HTML5 is unresolved on this issue right now, and we felt that our commitment to aligning with HTML5 was more important than narrowing the choices on the video formats. So basically what we say is it's the HTML5 video tag. Anything you can do in HTML5 video is legal as EPUB3. Scripting is based on JavaScript, but it's JavaScript as specified by HTML5 and SVG because they're core formats. So it's not everything about JavaScript, and there are guidelines in there about how to use JavaScript. I'll get at it in a minute when I get into the metadata. EPUB trigger that associates controls with multimedia, so that's a new element in the spec that is what launches a video, for example. Media overlays is the ability to synchronize text and recorded audio. This is not the same as text to speech, which is my next item, which is computer generated speech. The media overlays is based on a human recording and synchronizing your text with that. Another interesting anecdote, I was one of my consulting clients, I was at their offices, and we were taking a break, and one of their IT guys came up to me and said, hey, I just heard that Apple, this is like months and months before EPUB 3 was recommended, said, Apple's just announced that iBooks can now synchronize text and audio. How did they do that? And is this an example of a commercial company going in a proprietary direction? And will the EPUB 3 spec even matter if Apple does it the way Apple does it? Well, we checked with the people on the working group from Apple, and they said, no, our spec is the EPUB 3 spec. Because they were involved in the working group, they knew what the spec was going to be for this. That's what they implemented. So they didn't call it EPUB 3, but in effect, it is EPUB 3. So if you synchronize text and audio using media overlays, you're ready to go in iBooks. Text-to-speech, PLS is a pronunciation lexicon. That's how you tell the computer that you don't say XML, you don't say STM for STM, but you do say NISO, for example. It needs to know how to pronounce things like acronyms. SSML is a way to embed those instructions inline in your content. And then CSS3 has a speech module. That's one of the new modules that's included as well. I think I seem to have skipped a slide because, let me just go on a little farther here. Yeah, I think I did. I wanted to say, before I get into metadata, I wanted to say a couple more things about what we mean when we say HTML5. Technically, HTML5 is the structural markup. But when people refer to HTML5 in general usage, oftentimes they're really referring to a combination of HTML5, which is the structural markup, CSS, which is the presentation, and JavaScript, which is the behavior. So when you hear people talk about HTML5, oftentimes they really mean that group of three technologies that are all closely related, one for the markup, one for the presentation, one for the behavior. So the metadata is a very rich model. I don't have time to get into as much detail as I have in this presentation, but I believe, Anthony, the presentation is going to be posted and available to everybody.
Yes.
So I'm going to zip through this, but the fundamental... It's dramatically improved over the paltry, almost non-existent metadata model in the old EPUB spec. So now you can associate metadata with the package as a whole, with any of the components of the package, all the, you know, the content files, images, etc., spine items, and even inline in your content. You can now embed semantics, for example, in an EPUB. I mentioned that I wanted to specify what's meant by external. External resources really mean external to the EPUB, but still in the container, okay? There are only two things that an EPUB is permitted to. It's still a legal EPUB, even though it's pointed to something that is outside the container, and that's for streaming video and streaming audio, because it was deemed just impractical to require everybody to necessarily put entire video files or entire audio files into the package. So it's permissible for those to be external. But the other kind of external resources are things like you could put a MARC record, a Prism metadata, XMP metadata, an Onyx file, etc. These can all be in the package, and then there's a link element in the metadata that can link to these things. It's based on Dublin Core. There's a small default vocabulary, which means metadata terms that can be used without a prefix. We have a group of only five reserved vocabulary. DC terms is one of them, MARC, Onyx, Media, and XSD, where you don't have to declare the prefix, but you still have to use it. But then any other vocabulary that you want to use, you can simply declare the prefix. There's a mechanism in the package that says, here's how you declare a prefix, and your prefix could be mytag, M-Y-T-A-G, colon, blah, blah, blah. So it can be a proprietary thing. It can be any kind of a public vocabulary. It's designed to be flexible because obviously these vocabularies are being invented all the time. There's a way to specify what you mean by a specific term if you're pulling it out of a particular vocabulary. Don't think I need to get into those details. The identifier issue is something I want to deal with because it was a knotty problem with an extremely elegant solution, I think. The EPUB standard always required what was called a unique identifier. Well, it may not surprise you that people have different interpretations of what the word unique means. The technologists tend to mean absolutely unique. In other words, bit for bit identical, this file is the same as this file. If it's different, then it needs a different identifier, right? Because it's not the same thing. Publisher, on the other hand, tends to think, wait a minute, I just made three corrections of typos that I found in my book. It's the same book. I don't want to give it a different identifier because now it doesn't look like the same thing, but it really is the same thing. Well, what we ended up coming up with was that you can put any number of IDs in an EPUB now. So, for example, you can put DOIs in, you can put any number of ISBNs, you can put ISSNs, et cetera. You do have to distinguish, you have to designate one ID as the unique identifier for this publication. And the specification now says that that should be a persistent ID. In other words, instead of changing it, if you're making small changes that are fairly inconsequential, it doesn't really change what the publication is, that should not change. But what we've also added is one of the metadata elements is a meta property using the DC terms modified attribute or attribute value, and it's a timestamp. So basically, what uniquely defines the package is the publication identifier plus the timestamp. That actually is unique, even if you've just changed one bit. But that means that the publication can still be identified as the same thing. I think I'm running out of time to get into my title illustration, although I love talking about this, but I love talking about all this stuff. So if you want me to talk about that later, I can. Some specific things. One of the no-brainers was that the old spec had no way for you to tell which image in there was the cover of the book. Duh. So now we've got something that says, that one's the cover image. Most of these others are things that are designed to alert a reading system to something that it's going to have to deal with. One of the things that's different about EPUB versus the web is that in an online environment, browsers and other systems just encounter things when they encounter them, right? So if there's some MathML in it, it doesn't know there's MathML in there until it hits the MathML. Well, what this metadata does is it says, if any of your content documents inside your package have MathML in it, you have to put in your package metadata way up front a flag that says, hey, that one has MathML in it. That one has scripted content in it. That one has SVG in it, et cetera. So that's a useful thing. So again, what this really is a way of putting together a lot of components that are commonly used, but putting them together in an organized, well-documented way. And let's see, since I'm out of time, let me mention one other thing, which I think is really, really fundamental. I said I would get back to the elephant in the room. One thing that I'm now on a kind of a campaign to help people understand is that this is actually a really useful spec, even if you're not delivering your content as an ebook to an ebook reader system. The reason for that is that the files inside there are all done in a way that's really optimal for creating an app, putting your content online, etc., and it documents what all the stuff is. So it makes all the sense in the world to prepare your content in alignment with this spec, because you're going to get maximal utility out of it, even if right now you're not actually delivering an EPUB out to anybody. Because if you're sending something off to, you know, an app developer, if I were an app developer, I'd love getting the files I'm getting as an EPUB, because I know what I'm getting, and it's going to tell me where everything is and what's in there. So it's a really useful thing. I think I'm out of time. Thank you. Thank you.